on today's Compassion Radio.
Having been involved in multiple countries, it seems odd to me at times that people identify me with Ukraine, but God said, these are your people. This is not your project. I teach students, I mentor staff, and I consult with leadership. Mm-hmm. Those are the people, and I have big dreams about being able to do this, that, or the other. Next month, I've got meetings with leadership from two of the largest Protestant denominations in Ukraine. Did I seek that out? No. Could I have? Sure. Could have pushed it. But relationships happened, and they came to me and said, would you help change the worship culture in our churches?
If you could go anywhere in the world and set up shop, where would you go? Hi, this is Compassion Radio, and we take you to some of the places you may never have considered going, much less book a ticket. Yet when we hear the stories of what really is going on in the spiritual realm in parts unknown to us, it can change our tune, especially if we're already in the habit of asking God to let us be part of His work in the world. Fred Heumann has made a life of racing to where the action is in God's kingdom. In his life, he found that all roads lead through Kyiv, Ukraine, at least for him. And he's having a major impact on the worship life of Eastern Europe and Central Asia as a result. As an adjunct professor at the Ukraine Evangelical Theological Seminary, he regularly draws on his account of hard-won wisdom and knowledge of worship life in many cultures to help build the unified kingdom culture that Christ has been building for 2,000 years. If you missed yesterday's program, I encourage you to catch the podcast at our website, CompassionRadio.com. Today, we'll pick it up right where we left off. Fred, you've taken us on a great road trip here. In some ways, kind of a rabbit hole. We've just kind of jumped into all kinds of things, which is what happens when you're out there and available to God. He takes you sometimes on a really wild ride.
Yeah.
Because he's so excited about the people that are responding to the gospel, how much his church is growing and changing the world, not just for the better in our mind's eye about economics and ethics and morality and those things.
Yeah.
He's transforming futures, generations of people that will come to know him because of the work he's doing today. Every generation is always a seed planting ministry. Every one of them.
Yep.
We plant things that will outlast us and outgrow us in our time on earth.
Yep.
And if we're thinking eternally, we're thinking in terms of what's the long game? What kind of things can we invest in now that even if I don't see them come to fruition or maturity in my lifetime are still worth doing? You're investing in people like that in Ukraine, but it's not the only place you have a heart and passion for. Tell me about the bigger work of Music Works International. How international is it really? Are you finding new opportunities to speak into an evangelical culture here in America that is also in some places becoming a resurrectional culture? They're discovering the power of those generations that went before them and recapturing some of the passion of their fathers and are paying it forward. I mean, what's going on in your ministry and how God's been readjusting your focus? And not just because of COVID.
Yeah, well, yeah, you have a lot of time to sit and think, so that does actually hopefully open you up to some other ideas. You know, to be absolutely honest, I'm trying not to expand too much, only because I want to be fit at what's in my hands. And I know I'm very good at hyping things if I wanted to hype.
Yeah.
One of the things I'm doing is trying to bring other people with me. I think of the international team we have, which is, you know, between the U.S. and the U.K., and guys who have their doctorates in worship studies, who've been involved in international ministry for a long time, giving them the opportunity to see what God's doing in Ukraine as an impetus toward them sharing some of these concepts where they are. Mm. You know, it's been very, very interesting because I've spent most of my ministry, almost all of it, outside the U.S., mm-hmm. whether it being itinerant or resident or now non-residential missionary. I often have a hard time understanding Americans.
Yeah.
And maybe that's true for all of us who live in America in these days, but I have a hard time seeing that. So I'm trying not to do anything on a grandiose scale, but trying to do it mentoring, speaking to other leaders, trying to get them involved, teaching. There's a guy that I've mentored for years in Ghana. I'm looking at the map here, various and sundry people who are in ministry throughout the states, and trying to empower them to get involved. Mm. Influencing the influencers, again, is part of the deal. And when you're one person working out of disorganized pile of things here, well, I dream a lot, but it's hard to get it done when you're just one person. So to be honest, since you asked a very sweeping question, trying to say, Lord, who do I need to bring alongside in this season so that I can focus on what only I can do? And I don't mean only I can do, but just focus on just what I can do, what I'm reasonably good at. Where are the areas in my gifting that are holding it back? as opposed to pressing it forward.
Okay, you responded now with a generality, a principle. Tell me the specifics. What are you discovering that God has said, this is what you have to offer right now, and this is what you don't have?
Years ago, we did a personality test kind of thing, and people who were in charge said I wasn't organized.
Mm.
And at that point, I had sent multiple groups to multiple countries where I booked it, recruited it, chose the music, headed it up, led it on the road, was the primary speaker, and they said I wasn't organized. And when I took this test and the guy brought it back and read it as a third person, he said, the man is organized. And I about wept.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, really, because I'd been smacked upside the head saying, you're not organized. You are organized toward a goal.
Mm-hmm.
Where your wife is organized, she will organize the ants in a row in the yard, and she'll find a system to make them go the way she wants them, just because she loves to organize things. I love to get something done. So my organization is toward a goal. But that means that the little details, sometimes the niggledy details, not the important ones, get lost, because when I have the mission, I can pull it all together. I can make it happen. I can put the group on the road. I can make the conference happen. I can do this. But there's lots of piles of little things on the sides of the road that are left. So the opportunity to get some people alongside who can take care of that, so I don't have to think about that. It's not just me trying to avoid responsibility. It's me trying to be honest with what may be holding this thing back from going where it needs to go. When I look at, why does God give you a network? I don't know. But I think it's partly to make these kind of connections.
Mm-hmm.
And if I can make those connections, it really isn't about me.
Mm-hmm.
It's about saying, you have this need, and this guy has the provision. Let me introduce you.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be more about doing that. So it's trying to find other people on the less glamorous side. You know, Paul talked about the gifts that were supposedly, you know, not fit to view.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know they were fit to view, but you just didn't notice them because you didn't want to talk about them because you wanted to have the glory for the people up front. But without those people, without their gifting, without their input, without their skill, it's useless. That's personal confession for all of your listeners. Thank you very much.
And so, at this point in your life, what's the new thing? I mean, obviously, when you're given the time of silence or solitude, which is what we all kind of feel a bit about the past 14, 15 months, that we've been isolated. And I was talking with a friend in Zagreb, Croatia earlier today. Why does it feel like the entire world's on lockdown? Lockdown from what? Lockdown is usually to keep you away from somebody because something bad's going to happen to somebody else or to you. So we have to separate you. How do you separate the entire world from itself? We feel like we're all in lockdown, but it's more about an emotional state of unwillingness to persevere, to be patient, and to be selfless for the sake of others, and realizing that being kind and being considerate and caring for those who might not be as strong as I am physically means that I'm going to have to give up something. I really, really, really don't want to do that.
Yeah.
If we really talk to ourselves honestly, we would say that. I am more important than these other people, and my impulses, my freedom, my independent agency is more important than even somebody else's life. And that's the emotional and moral and spiritual struggle I think most of the church is going through right now. Do we really have to be the ones that have to do all the tough stuff just to keep people from getting COVID? In some ways, the Bible's pretty clear. Yeah, you are. You're the first ones. Yet, I'm not trying to be casting shade or shaming anybody for the intense feelings we all go through, because it's really hard to deal with a kind of discipline that we've never really been asked to do. And yet, of course, you and I both know in many parts of the world, the church looks at this and says, this is nothing. I mean, I spent 17 years in Soviet prison. You know, I'll wear a mask. But again, it's not a comparison game, is it?
No.
This is about submitting ourselves to something that's greater, more wonderful than us. And having to ask God, what do you have for me in this? And what is it that you call me to do that may be unique amongst all people in my sphere of influence that can help somebody find God through all this and know they're loved and that they're not forgotten? Is there somebody that has that need that I can help?
Yeah, I mean, that's very astute. That's a very astute observation. I mean, it comes back to the things I mentioned earlier. It's not all about you, your preferences, and it shouldn't be all about you. And like you said, people who lived in Soviet prisons, the Christians who met in the catacombs, Nero's persecution. Let's talk about multiple other persecutions. Or my Ukrainian students whose parents and grandparents met once a month in the forest because they couldn't meet any other place, because they would get sent to Siberia or shot or killed or lose their job or lose their opportunity at school. And we think, well, I mean, you know, never mind. I'm not going to pick on this guy. The guy at the supermarket who, when I said, hey, man, did you not see the sign out front that says you have to wear a mask? He said, I don't do masks. going, oh, ow, ow. So it exposes what's really there in our hearts, I think. And I'll quote Matt's song again, the other part of it, which is, when the music fades, all is stripped away and I simply come.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I can't do anything else but come. So you're stripped down to listening, mm-hmm. hopefully. And then you hear God saying, no, you can make a difference there. When I think about Ukraine, you know, having been involved in the world in multiple countries, it seems odd to me at times that people identify me with Ukraine. But God said, these are your people. This is not your project. So my relationships with the leadership, you know, people ask me what I do. I said, I teach students, I mentor staff, and I consult with leadership. Mm-hmm. Those are the people. And I have big dreams about being able to do this, that, or the other thing. But I believe that because of the way I'm wired and the way God's spoken to me, my job is the people. But it's interesting as well to see God open up other doors. On this next trip next month, I've got meetings with leadership from two of the largest Protestant denominations in Ukraine. Did I seek that out? No. Could I have? Sure. I could have pushed it. But relationships happened, and they came to me and said, would you help change the worship culture in our churches?
And based on what you and I discussed a couple of years ago, that's a big step forward. I mean, there's been 100 years of distrust that was fostered and engendered by the Soviet system to say, don't trust anybody, and divide and conquer. And they tried to put everybody in their silos, force them to not communicate and make them distrustful of each other, because they could then control the populations and keep the church from unifying and competing with the state.
Right.
And now, after three generations of just assuming you can't trust those people, you can't trust that band of Christianity, you can't trust them, and they look at that and say, why are we saying that to each other? Why are we believing this?
That's only been aided and abetted, unfortunately, by well-meaning Westerners importing their issues and adding that on top of that already distrustful atmosphere. It's like, hey, you know what? Get rid of that. These are your brothers. You got to work together. You got to move toward it. I think, too, if there's anything I bring in this particular case, it's the uniqueness of being exposed to so many different parts of the body of Christ internationally and being involved in international organizations that are working with believers in many countries. One of the coolest things, I guess this says it for me, I'm teaching the history of Christian worship. I'm in Ukraine, which has a pretty strong history of Orthodoxy. And in fact, Orthodox Christianity came to that part of the world through Kiev in 1088. But all these kids whom are 90%, 95% Protestant, I would sit and explain to them the history of how Orthodox believers see their worship. Not whether it's right or wrong. I think you need to understand how they see what they do, as opposed to what you've been told, how they see what they do. And I went through this a couple of days of talking about this and what it meant and this, that, and the other. And one of the gals, who's a dear, sweet, very thoughtful gal, raises her hand and says, Mr. Fred, are you even Protestant? I laughed and laughed. I said, Dasha, yes. But that doesn't mean I can't appreciate what other people bring to the party. And you need to understand that what you're seeing is not what you've been told you've been seeing. You can only define it by what the people are thinking themselves as they do it.
Friends, soon after we recorded this interview, we got word that one of the key staff members at Ukrainian Evangelical Theological Seminary passed away from COVID after a long struggle. She leaves behind her husband, who is another member of the faculty and administration. He barely survived the disease and was just released from hospital days ago. The entire seminary is reeling from the loss. Please be in prayer for them and all that grieve, and for Fred as he goes to be with them in the days to come. It reminds me that we all still face great challenges in the days and months ahead, and that God must be in it with us, or there's really very little reason for real hope. With his help, however, we will get through this together. We really need each other if we're going to see victory over fear and all the other enemies to a real, faithful living in this world. Please know that we deeply appreciate and value you. You, your prayers, your support, and friendship are what keeps us going. Thank you. Your courage and faithful giving keep us on the air, in the arena, standing with you to help the kingdom keep growing in the 21st century. Here's how. Just visit our website, CompassionRadio.com, or call our toll-free order line, 1-800-868-2478. Our mailing address is Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859. Reach out to us whatever way works for you. We can't do this work any other way than with you. Thank you for loving us in this way.
That doesn't mean I can't appreciate what other people bring to the party. And you need to understand that what you're seeing is not what you've been told you've been seeing. Yep. You can only define it by what the people are thinking themselves as they do it.
Like saying that being a Protestant, the only thing we do is protest. Well, maybe some do. Or Baptists, the only thing they do is baptize people. They do nothing else. Of course, it's an indicator of something that's important to us, but it's not the only thing that makes us who we are. It's a whole person, a whole relationship, a whole culture, and a whole God that we're trying to get our arms around here.
A pastor friend once said this very well. It says, the character and attributes of God are too large to be contained in any one culture. Mm-hmm. And I think they're also too large to be contained in, may I say this, in any one Christian church? Yikes, I could get in trouble. Did I really say that? You can edit that out. And so rather than thinking that the Baptists just baptize and the Orthodox just do it a certain way, or the Presbyterians just presbyter, it's saying what part of the gift that God has placed in man are they focusing on? Let's find the strength there. Because all of us are flawed, all of us have issues. But let's look at the strengths there, and that's what we need to celebrate. You know, what man meant for evil, God can use for good, both within the church mm-hmm. and outside the church, in culture. So if we try to bring our Western culture with us, we're in trouble. And sometimes if we try to just bring our Western church culture.
And nothing else.
And nothing else, exactly. If that's all we focus on, we're franchising, not being missional. Mm. The franchising thing is I can go to a McDonald's anywhere in the world and get a Big Mac that pretty much tastes like a Big Mac, except in India because it's not meat. But I can go to Korea and I can get red bean ice cream in a McDonald's. I can go to Amsterdam and have a Heineken at a McDonald's. So it's basically the franchise with some allowance for culture, allowance for local culture, rather than saying, here are the basic things. That's in a commercial sense. But from the church to go right. in and say, here are the basic
things. Contextualizing.
Yes.
But contextualizing in our terms here is not about marketing. And many people would see that as saying, oh, just put the right veneer on it. They'll buy into it. Then we'll get them fixed. They'll become more like us. And I'm far more convinced as I travel and as I've spent time with people like you and the pastors and worship leaders there in Eastern Europe. There is a kingdom culture out there that has roots all the way back to Jesus. There is a kingdom ethic that was established by Jesus, his disciples, and the first and second century church that stood the test of time. And finding our way into that mm-hmm. living thing is what I'm becoming more and more passionate about. You know how your spirit kind of resonates when you look in there and you see something, you hear something, you watch worship happen in a cultural context you don't recognize, but something lights up in your soul and you feel something, you hear a message from God in the middle of that, you realize this is it. This is the thing that God showed up for today.
Yeah.
And even if I can't understand a word they're saying in their language, I felt that. I know God was here speaking to me and I need to pay attention.
Yeah. And that's really an excellent observation. And that means that we don't know it all. Mm-hmm. You know, we come in with what we can offer and maybe as... And at this age, I have to say, as an elder brother, to say, mm-hmm. you know, this is incredible what you're doing. Now, watch out, because if you go down the same road like we did, this is going to happen. So don't do that.
Be careful.
Yeah, be careful, because it can go to this, this, and this. Another one of the dear instructors who's very close to us, she's starting to write a lot of songs. Well, Katya, she starts to write a lot of songs and is a worship leader herself and a great pianist, teaches at school. And she got very excited. She sent me a text and says, oh, I'm so excited. We're getting away to get our songs out. We're going to have a Christian hit parade.
Well, welcome to Saturday morning Christian radio.
Insert pregnant pause. And I went, He says, why are you not excited? I said, well, I have seen the good and the bad of that. Let's talk about the goal. The goal should not be to have a Christian hit parade. The goal is, if God gives us something, how do we share it with others in case that it might bless them and resource them as well, rather than, hey, we're going to have... I'm supposed to be in broadcasting, so I try to... I mean, I've always wanted to be in radio. You know...
I'm supposed to be in broadcasting, too. It sometimes works out.
I get it. Well, that's, let me know how that happens for you. We're saying, hey, as you walk down that road, there's a steep cliff on the left... Hang toward the wall so you don't go over the edge. I mean, that's the kind of thing that I feel like God's allowed me to be a part of, and that's why it's person to person. That's why it's continuing to plan and to move toward what you feel like God's called you to do, but not to let that overtake the people who are, quote, in your way, the people who are there in your way because you're meant to have something for them.
Okay, I'll throw another one of Jesus' parables out there about how hard it is for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. We assume that this is about intellectual assent to the truth of his lordship and accepting him as being sovereign over us. What I'm thinking about in the context of our conversation, Fred, is that that message is so difficult for the rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Is you and I have been out there, we've seen the kingdom of God in many of its manifestations, you know, maybe a handful compared to the bazillions of great fellowships and believers around the world we have not met.
Right.
But we've seen enough to know that that's it. That's the kingdom. Sometimes I think we step in with the attitude of we do have it all. We are the rich ones. And we end up getting stuck in the doorway, and we can't even get into the fellowship because we're so full of ourselves.
Yeah.
We revere our own sense of entitlement or spiritual wealth or whatever, that God bless us because we're Americans, and therefore he must love us more.
Oh, dear.
And then we don't really get in the door. We don't get to be where they are. We miss out.
Yeah.
How difficult it is for the rich man to enter the kingdom of God. That, to me, is more the image that Jesus is going for than what we have made it out to be about being theological.
Yeah, there's a reason that Jesus talked more about money than anything else. I think it's because of the hold that money can have over us. But also, I think there is a principle there. If anything is more important to you than that kingdom, then you're going to have a hard time getting in. I mean, if you think you've got it all, in whatever you're doing, I don't care what it is. Maybe it's your ministry. Maybe it's your job. Mm. Maybe it's your neighborhood. Maybe it's your family. I mean, I know I'm speaking blasphemy in North America to say that. But if that's keeping you from this and keeping you from acting on what you sense God's wanting you to do, you're going to have a hard time. I was blown away several years ago when a dear friend of ours in England, he had some really strong things to say about the overemphasis on the family in North America.
That's odd.
but saying all you're talking about is the family, the family, the family. His ministry, he'd experienced so many people who were called. And that doesn't mean you should ignore your family either. But just that we've come to think that it can only be expressed in a certain way, that focusing on your family means you don't go overseas. Focusing on your family means you don't answer God's call to do this, that, or the other. Mm. When God will nail the person where they're most in the way, and help them move out of the way so they can get what he wants them to do done. When my good friend said that, it made me think for years. And I've kept that in the back of my head to say, what is more important than what God's called us to do? On the way, we can get sidetracked. We get stuck in a cul-de-sac rather than stopping for a moment and continuing on the way of the kingdom. I mean, you've experienced that as a parent. You want your kids to do great things, but then somebody says, well, you go and do something a little risky. You said, gee, I'm not sure. Some parents will either say, please go, we know God's in control. And other parents will say, I don't think you should do this. Yeah. That isn't necessarily only about kingdom things, but we've seen it in that particular arena.
You and I both have friends in our generation and the one right below us that are the first to respond to this maladjusted notion that to go to the mission field, you took your family over there, then you sent them away to someplace safe. You stayed doing ministry. Your kids went to someplace like Black Forest Academy up in Germany or to Rift Academy in the middle of Africa to be safe and away from all the dangers. In some ways, the devil managed to destroy a zillion families in this regard, and they didn't enter in together into a joint sense of mission and purpose. And it devastated generations of missions because of that. And we have friends that decided, no, if we're going to be called, we're all called. And even our friends over at Josiah Venture, they're based out of Czech Republic, said this is a family mission. If people are coming and God's told them to have children and he's calling them to this ministry, then they're all called and God will find a way. And we're going to find a way to support families and build strong families in the context of the cultures where they're going to move to.
Nice.
And not be separated, not be destroyed because we're afraid of what might happen to children in a foreign environment.
We're all subject to that. Please, anybody who's listening, don't think we're just pointing fingers.
No.
You know, we all have our particular areas where we choose to not trust and not be radical or not be, quote, committed, unquote. And so that's not a slam. It's worth considering. I mean, it's one thing to send them to school for a couple of years. It's another thing to send them away.
Right.
It's another thing to isolate them from it. And it probably could be more of an issue now, I would think, because you're never away from the culture you're from. I mean, it's in your pocket. It's on your screen.
And some of the worst parts of it are right
there. Well, yeah. This is a simple illustration. Another city, I'd find the local NPR station.
Yeah.
Now I just push the button on mine and listen to my Nashville NPR station. That's a simple thing, but all of a sudden, I just live in that bubble. I don't hear what's going on. Even if I'm only there for a weekend, I can still hear the national stuff, but I don't hear the local.
Of course, I would love to have all my friends in my Compassion Radio bubble and listening to the podcast every day on their favorite app. And, of course, that would be marvelous. I could speak to them all day and they hear nothing but my voice and people like you saying, this is how the kingdom works. But you and I both know they're not going to spend 24/7 with us. I want them to spend a quality half hour with us every day if they can.
Yeah.
I want even more that they see us in context of the big thing God's doing and their part.
Yeah, and in many ways, what you're doing is a sign. We are so consumed with the 24/7 news cycle. We have very few people who will look at what's there and digest somebody who is going to curate that so we understand what's important, rather than just responding to every headline we see without understanding the background, believing just what's there from a couple of sentences. That's the service that things like Compassion Radio provide.
There's more great insider info about the booming church in Ukraine and across Asia coming from Fred Heumann of Music Works International coming up next week. I hope you'll tune in then. And remember, none of this is possible without you. If you believe hearing the good news from the front lines of faith builds your faith, then let us know today. Just call us at 1-800-868-2478. Write us at Compassion Radio, P.O. Box 2770, Orange, California, 92859, or make your gift through our website, CompassionRadio.com. We need you, friend, so contact us today. Join us again Monday for an all-new Chasing the Word on Compassion Radio.